The following program has been brought to you by Rolling Press, a family-run, eco-friendly printing company. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Thank you for tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. You are listening to a special studio recording, and I'm your host, Erin Fairbanks. We are coming to you, as always, from the back of Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It's a sunny, cold day after spring, and we're excited to have in the studio with us CEO of the Epicurean Restaurant Group, August Cardona. August, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Erin. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you in. So you are running the helm of the Epicurean Group, which includes four Italian-style spots, Dell'Anima, L'Artusi, Anfora, and La Pico. And we want to kind of take a trip back in time and get a sense of how you got here. Now, you're originally from New York State, right?
From New York State, from the great capital, Albany, New York.
Albany, New York, yeah. Where shit is happening or not happening, depending on the year. And tell me a little bit, what was your life like growing up? What did your parents do? What was kind of your shtick as a youngster and up in Albany?
Trying to keep out of trouble with my brothers, but I grew up in the food business. My grandfather's, one of his oldest brothers, when he came over from Italy, opened up a little pork store, Cardona's. My grandfather came over from Italy about 15 years after him. They were the only two. It was an arranged marriage kind of thing, two sisters, two brothers. Opened up his own store eventually called Cardona's Meat Market. And my father took it over from him. And then now my brothers are taking it over from my father. It's definitely morphed from, butcher, a neighborhood kind of little pork store, to more of like a Balducci's or a Citarella. It's a, my brother's a chef. It's a catering company. They have, do catering and prepared foods and specialties and still have, all the produce and all the meat. So I grew up in that business. And my father, we were done playing football games on Saturday afternoons. And then when kids were going to like relax and then go out to parties, my dad was like, come over to the store, help close out. So that's what we grew up working.
So what was the role that you liked most at the store? I mean, I'm sure there were plenty of jobs you weren't into, but was there anything in particular that you were like, first to volunteer for, or was it just mostly like plucking the lovely olives or bits that you munch on?
I love bringing the olives out in the morning. I'm a huge olive fan, so I would be eating olives at 8 o'clock in the morning. Still do if they're available. But one thing my brothers always joke with me as we were getting older and we come back from college and work and you always worked in the store. Then for a couple of years after school, I went to finance for a couple of years. I came back to help expand the business, and I never learned to butcher. And my brothers all learned, and they were like, why aren't you learning to put in? I knew I didn't want to go into that. I definitely was, the plan was to come down here, and I was into wine and I always had more of an interest on the operational side and the business side of things. And so they always joked, they're like, I knew it when you wouldn't go over there and learn. Even now I wish I learned to butcher, because now all I want to do, I joke with my partner, our executive chef, like, one of these days I'm just gonna take a year and just cook and just be in the back of house and try to learn, because that's something I don't have experience in a professional kitchen in the back of house, which is something I always wanted.
Well, there's plenty of time. Yeah. I should mention that we are celebrating a birthday here in the studio today. Right. So happy birthday.
Thank you.
So business, you went to Cornell for your undergrad?
For undergrad, yeah.
And what was your concentration at Cornell?
Well, most people here, and they know I'm in the restaurant business, they assume I was in the hotel school at Cornell. It's pretty well known, but I wasn't. I thought the last thing I wanted to do, I grew up in the market and working a lot, and it was great, learned a hard work ethic. But I was like, I'm not going to go into food or anything. So I got a business degree, undergraduate business degree. I did eventually do a food marketing concentration and took a wonderful trip to Japan and worked some big food shows, one in Chicago. And so I definitely kind of said, all right, well, I might have that background eventually. I might go back into it. But you know, most of my friends were going into Wall Street, going to finance, and I was like, all right, that's I guess I'll go there. And I didn't go to Wall Street. I went to Chicago and worked for a small investment research firm originally outside. So, but eventually just calls you back in, the hospitality and the services.
It's industry. In your blood, so to
it
speak.
Is, yeah. As my best Al Pacino from Godfather 3, you know, pulled me back in. So
that was your best?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's early.
I'm not
going to
make you do it on radio, but what little I know about you, I'm pretty sure that was not your best. So why Chicago? I mean, New York to Chicago, I mean, was it that was a job that was the best fit, or were you just kind of looking to get, you know, away for a bit, or?
To be honest, I always felt I was going to end up in New York, so I wasn't worried about, like, eventually going to New York City. But I'd be completely honest, like, I was bartending in school, and it was homecoming, and a bunch of guys had been going out to Chicago and working for this one guy who was recruiting a bunch of kind of, you know, more athletes and kind of go-getters and this type of thing and for this one company, this investment research company out in Chicago. And I was bartending and had, you know, just the guys were back and just really entertaining everybody, and the bar was busy. It was, you know, a homecoming weekend, and this guy was there. He's the CEO of the company, and he was like, who's this guy? And he was like, I love that guy. And next thing I know, like the next Monday, I get a call from him, and he's like offering me a job and this and that. And I was like, all right, you know, sounds good. And I did some interviewing from other places, and ultimately he was like, you got to come out here. And so I was like, I'll do it. Let's make it happen.
You were a bro. He's like, yeah. I'm seeing you, a fellow brother.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but you moved up really quickly in that company. I mean, I've obviously, you know, 4 successful restaurants under your belt, you know, early in your birthdays. You know, what was it, do you think, that kind of flipped the switch, though? Because obviously you were finding success in your position in Chicago, but decided to leave and come back to New York State. So what happened?
I think when I was having my first child, I was like, well, what do you really want to do with your life? And I think that happens. I was young. I was 22, and that makes you say, really, what do you want to do? I mean, that's the truth. I it made me really feel like I liked making, you know, the money you make in that industry is a little bit better, and in the beginning, and you know, the title, and definitely things were going well. But I wasn't loving what I was doing. I wasn't loving it at all. So I had a passion for wine and really wanted to get back involved with my family's business and try to see what was going on with that and eventually get to the city. So it just smacked me across the face and said, get serious. Like, let's do it.
Like, this is real. Some real shit's happening.
Yeah, yeah. Like don't get trapped in a job that you don't want to be in.
The golden handcuffs.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I feel like people talk about a lot. So that sounds very mature for a 22-year-old. So the love of wine, I mean, what can you talk about when you first kind of got into wine? And how did you even, was that part of your family's kind of scene? Or was it something you pursued on your own?
No, I think throughout junior year at Cornell, I would make the transition from kind of Natty Light, Milwaukee's Best, you know, the usual suspects, and started to took a wine class at the hotel school, and I was like, ooh, this tastes a little bit better than what I've been drinking for the last 2 years. Tequila and Jameson, and not that there's anything wrong with
no,
that.
No, still delicious.
So that piqued my interest, and took one of the wine classes at the hotel school at Cornell, and then we honestly started to have like little wine sessions in our house, and I got into it. And then when I was in Chicago, we would go out to dinners a lot, and I still had an interest in obviously the food industry. And when I realized I was leaving, actually, and I was coming back to New York. Before then, I left my job and opened a restaurant for Roy Yamagu Roy's. If you've ever heard of these Roy's restaurants, they're like Hawaiian fusion, and they're huge now. They're like a chain, but there was only like 20 or so at the time, showing my age. And they were opening one in Chicago, and I was like, I'll go through this training program and just get back for 3 months, get back into it. So I went as a server and opened up Roy's, and they were big on their wine program, and I started getting back into it a little bit, and then when I went back to Albany, it was about a year and a half, I went back and helped my father and my brothers kind of expand the business, or, you know, my older brother wasn't working yet with my father, so I brought him in, kind of we put together a little bit of a plan and did that whole thing, and then was focused to go down to the city and officially, like, let's get in the wine business in New York City. And that's when I made that move. So
what were your entry point wines?
my entry point wines. Well, being up at Cornell, you know, obviously Riesling and the Finger Lakes, it was more of the Rieslings up there that definitely would. So I think it's funny because I don't think you, for me, it was Riesling originally. And then when my real maiden first wine job at Italian Wine Merchants, it was Italian wines, which I think are popular and people drink them a lot, but I don't think it's necessarily the first place people go to learn about wine just because so many varietals and the rules are all, you know. So I actually started with Riesling and Italian wine in my kind of early wine career, and Barolo, and which is, I think, what people end up at eventually. So I was lucky enough by chance to start with those wines.
So Italian Wine Merchants, did you move to the city knowing you had that job, or did you kind of show up and offer to, you know, stock cases and hope that they would have you?
No, it took me about a year to get there. I came down to the city and took a job at Eli Zabar's wine store on the Upper East Side. I literally just went on Craigslist and started applying to wine jobs with really no wine experience whatsoever, and just hoped that somebody would like give me a shot. So I had a bartender to make ends meet, and I worked for, you know, whatever, $10 an hour at Eli Zabar's wine store, and it's like a sliver of a store at his flagship store on up on the Upper East Side, and I was there for about 3 months or 4 months, and Eli's like this, he's a retail genius, this guy, and I guess he sniffed out and got word that I wasn't grew up in the retail business, and basically they came to me one day and they're like, we need a manager in the store. You know, you got to be a manager in the store, you know, and I'm like, well, I don't want to be a manager in the store. I'm here to learn about wine. I'm fine being an hourly, you know, lowly hourly. They're like, nah, you pretty much have to come into the store. And I was like, okay. So I did that, but quickly just started looking to get back. And I mean, I didn't want to cause any waves. So then I got a job in a distributorship out in Connecticut for like 6 months, and it just wasn't it. And I was really just trying to find, but it was hard. I didn't have any experience on my resume. And finally, I was just peppering my resume out there to people and you know, with a long cover letter of just kind of trying to explain that, hey, I'm a hard worker, I'm a good learner, I'm reading my butt off here, and give me a shot. And I got called to Italian Wine Merchants to do the interview, and I was overwhelmed. I mean, that store is pretty, kind of, when you walk in, it's pretty intimidating. And just so happens that the founder, Sergio Esposito, his family, when they moved from Italy, they moved to Albany, New York. And so he actually knew my last name, and I know his family. You know, we still deliver groceries to his aunt in Albany, my family. So luckily enough, that was, and I didn't put two and two together. I didn't realize it. And so that's how I got the job there. That's where I met, you know, my partner and the whole thing. So
it's kind of like a magical time.
So
what were you doing when you started there? I mean, They like you enough to hire you, but it sounds like you still didn't have too much to offer other than like a lot of gumption and elbow grease.
Yeah, no, exactly. I read a lot. I tried to keep up, but it was hard because you can read as much as you get in the books, but to know the producers and the wines that are in the store that you're talking about, you can't unless you start tasting them and what. So they try to deflect you from actually having to talk to anybody for the first couple of months, and you just literally stand there and listen to people talk about it. And there were some great guys there at the time that knew a tremendous amount about wine, and I would just listen, and I really kind of put my head down and tried to learn as quickly as possible. And so I did, and I was doing the tastings a lot. I was doing the tastings in the back. They do these big dinners and tastings a lot, and so I would work every 4 nights a week. I'd work all through a day in the store, and then I'd be there at night, and I would take home wines after, because there was always open wines. I'd take them home. I'd literally be sitting there and reading in my book and tasting and reading about these wines. And that's how I learned. So,
yeah. So I'm curious about the strategy for that. Cause you know, I've always resisted learning about wine. Cause I feel like after having cooked for so long that I'm already obnoxious enough to go out to dinner with that, like, I don't want to add the wine onto it. Cause then I'm just like a know-it-all, but I'm trying to get over that. And I find, like, you know, just breaking down wine just feels really intimidating. So, you know, you're in an Italian shop, so I'm assuming there is like some focus there. But how do you kind of manage or think about that information? I mean, is it taking notes? Do you do like associations by region, by grape variety? Like when you're first trying to kind of wrap your head around really what makes a wine a wine, like, where did the light bulbs go off? Like, where were the kind of organizational points for you personally?
I think it was great to learn at Italian Wine Merchants because it was more about You know, they would just teach. I mean, balance was is very important, like everything, right? And life and everything. But balance is so important between the acidity and the fruit and the alcohol and really focusing on trying to kind of be able to know what's going on with those distinct properties in the wine when it's hitting your palate is something that, you know, we try to focus on. So to this day, I don't read, you know, I've a lot of my wine knowledge, I've lost a lot of. I still know a decent amount. I mean, Joe, my partner Joe's, you know, will always say, you still know a good, you don't give yourself enough. But it's more I learned what's a, you know, something that's a well-made wine and a bad one. So I think, you know, starting out, if you're starting anything, it's like try to get an understanding of acid and as much as possible and read about that stuff as opposed to, oh, I know what grapes and what wine and what region or what, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, that'll come eventually. I think it's so I tried to focus on learning what was a, you know, balanced wine. And then, yeah, just Italy. It's, I mean, there's just so many wines and producers and none of it makes sense. And so, I believe Vino Italiano, I read, obviously it was Joe Bastianich was involved with IWM in the beginning and while I was there. And so his book was a one that we obviously, him and Dave Lynch, and that was a great book to read and learn about wine. And so I would just sit there with that book and learn and taste. With somebody who knows what they're talking about.
Right.
Somebody that can tell you this is what asked, you know, this is what you're tasting for this, with this wine, you know, so that's really helpful.
Cool. So we are in the studio with August Cardona of the Epicurean Restaurant Group. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk about how you made the transition from Italian wine merchants to a restaurant and bar owner. So hang tight. We'll be right back.
Good morning, everyone. You're listening to Onions Milk by Iggy Dean on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Today's program has been brought to you by Rolling Press. Rolling Press is a family-run commercial offset print house that brings together environmentally friendly methods, ethical practices, and personalized service. Founded in 1998 by Eugene Lee and his father, Cam Lee, Rolling Press represents the harmony of traditional craftsmanship and green technology. Rolling Press prints using soy and vegetable inks, uses a variety of certified and recycled papers, and they incorporate a chemical-free production process. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
All right, we are back. You've tuned into the Heritage Radio Network. We are in studio with August Cardona of the Epicurean Restaurant Group. So we were chatting about your work getting to know wines and spending time at Italian wine merchants. And am I correct? Is that where you met your partner in the business, Joe?
Yeah, that's Joe. Joe, I think he was about 20 years old or 21 years old, came into the store when I was, he had been
old
there
enough
before.
To drink?
He was old. I think he was old. I think he had been there before, not old enough to drink. He came in I think he bought a bottle of wine and then was like, hey, I want to work here. You know, I think he tells a story, and I've definitely heard him tell the story before, and it was definitely that. And he was just like, can I work here? And our GM at the time was like, you can work here for free, which you can't even do anymore. And Joe was like, all right, I'll do it. I'll tastings. And And so, you know, I got to know Joe that way. I mean, I was on the floor still at that time. I hadn't, you know, they have an office where you move up and you sell wine to kind of more serious buyers and collectors and stuff. And I was still on the floor, and I was working a lot of events. And then this young guy, and I have brothers, and you know, I feel it was like a little kind of a brotherly relationship. And we became good buddies, and that's where we met. And then also Catherine Lahr, who's now Catherine Thompson, our exec chef, our partner, who's our executive pastry chef. That's where we met her as well.
Oh, wow. So kind of like a magical
I was on her
there.
Interview, and she thought like I was some big exec. That's a longer story, but it was pretty funny. I was at her lunch in Gramercy Tavern with her and Sergio, the owner, and she thought I was some big. I had been there for like 3 months. I just got it promoted, and Sergio's like, stay for this lunch and just don't say anything. And act serious. And that was her interview.
Like, wear your good shoes.
Yeah. So, anyway.
So, you were at Italian Wine Merchants for how long?
I was there for 4 years.
4 years.
Yeah.
But, so tell me, the first restaurant was Del Anima.
Right.
All right. So, where did that come from? I mean, how do you go from kind of hanging out at wine tastings and tasting wine, talking about, yeah, we should open a spot someday, to like... opening a spot?
Yeah, so Joe and I, like I said, we met there, became friends, but then Joe left, he went to Italy, but we stayed in touch. And when he came back from Italy, I was looking for a job, was working for, I think, Vinifera, and I might be missing working for Vinifera, great importer, we would do tastings at his apartment, him and a friend of ours, who's also in the business, down in South Carolina. And we just always talked about doing something together. And by that time, I had moved on to some more managerial roles at IWM, and I was eventually the director of operations there. And so I was just having – it's kind of funny. I saw Joe. He was at Babbo, and he had just started there. I had introduced him to Babbo because I knew they were looking for somebody who was kind of in the same family as IWM. And Joe jumped at that chance, got the interview, and got the job. And just a friend from college – told me about this little restaurant in the West Village that the guy, you know, it wasn't doing well and the owner wanted to sell, and would I be interested in taking a look at it? And at that time, I'd been at IWM for about, 2.5 years or so, and I was itching. I thought eventually I'd do something on my own. And Joe and I always talked about it. Not necessarily a restaurant. We had lots of ideas, of course. And so I was like, yeah, I'll take a look at the spot, you know. And I had just seen Joe that night. I actually ate dinner. I heard that Babbo had Movia Lunar, which was a new kind of funky wine that Movia from, you know, his producer from Sylvania was putting out. And I literally had nothing to do that night. It was like a holiday weekend in the summer, and there were some girlfriends that were going to some club, and I was like, I do not want to do that at all. And I just went to Babbo. I sat at the bar by myself, saw Joe, had the Movia Lunar, you know, had a great dinner there. And this buddy texted me, you know, that he was at a bar around the, you know, not too far in the West Village. I went and met him for a drink, and that's when he mentioned this restaurant. And it was where Del Anima is now. And the next day, I went over to the West Village and was looking around, snooping around. I was like, man, this guy's got it wrong, you know? Like, there's so many good things going on here. And I just, you know, he just didn't seem to fit. And I kind of couldn't tell why it was slow. And then I just subsequently sat out front of it that, like, for the next month and watched. And I was like, this place is just... So, you know, I was like, yeah, I'd be serious. I'd look into this, but the only way I'm going to do it, I'm not going to leave my job. I still feel good about my job. There's no way I'm going to, things were going great there. I was like, I've got one guy that if he wants to do it with me, you know, and run the thing and whatever, I trust him. And so of course I go to like whatever 23-year-old Joe at that time or 20, you know, and I'm like, hey man, you know, if I was to get this restaurant going, we'll get it funded and all that. And I'll be here, you know. Would you be there? Would you run it, be a partner? And he's like, yeah, of course, you know? And we had the apartment above too. And I always tell the story, you know, I was like, and I've got a studio above. And he's like this young kid excited about having a studio in the West Village that, you know, and I'm excited because I'm like, oh, the general manager is going to live above the restaurant and he doesn't know any different. So needless to say, Joe didn't leave that block for the first year that we were open. But that's how that kind of, and then to kind of bring Catherine in when it was happening, you know, I think in boxes. You know, they always joke, I'm an Excel spreadsheet guy. It's like my brain is, I've got a little creativity, but for the most part, everything needs to be in an Excel spreadsheet. And I knew that I wasn't going to be there during the day because I was still, you know, working full time at IWM. And we didn't know a chef. We weren't really in that world, Joe and I. And so we tapped Catherine. We knew that she was kind of, she was at Del Posto working some pastry and kind of at New York Vintners doing some different things. And she had some time. And for the first 8 weeks, she basically kind of was my connection to, like, let's help find us a chef. And then also, can you organize this kind of pre-out and this build and all this kind of stuff? And that's how she came involved. And she was like, I'm going to interview a bunch of chefs. But I think when we kind of explain what we want, and soulful cuisine, and just, you know, like nothing crazy, and a neighborhood place, and you know, just really flavorful. And she was like, I'm going to interview a bunch of people, but I think I have the guy for you. It's my boyfriend of the last 3 months. And we're like, come on,
no.
Catherine, come on. And but she was right. You know, she did. She interviewed a lot of people. Joe did as well. And he was the guy. And we had some different tastings from people. But when... You know, and I tell you, the second I knew it was, he put the what's now risotto alla pelota at Del Anima, which still the dish is still on there and a very popular dish there. When he made that for our tasting and brought it out, it was at the end too. He kind of downplayed it and he was like, "Ah, and this is just something." I was like, "This is the guy. I mean, this is the guy for sure." And then they end up getting married, and Catherine came on board officially a little bit later, and the rest is history.
The rest is history. Yeah. So, tell us the name Del Anima. What does that mean? Where did that come from?
Of the soul, from the soul. You're just Googling Italian stuff. Google translating Italian names and stuff like that. That and soul, and I think soul was something we were, you know, this was definitely, I think a lot of what we do is just from us, and we just want people to like it and all that kind of stuff. And this was definitely a soul, you know, a project from our soul. And Del Anima, we were, I mean, there was some, you know, there's always... You never have everybody loving a name, right? Still,
sure.
To this day. Every one of our names, people can talk. And it seemed to make sense, though. And now everybody, I think, loves it. I mean, everybody in our group, I mean. Like, not everybody, everybody.
That's all everybody says to my face, is they love it.
No, I mean, all of the players in our group, I think all love the name.
And so you guys have grown quite a bit. You know, now you have 4 spots now. So maybe we don't have a ton of time, but if you want to take us... through in broad strokes the kind of moments of importance as you like decided to bring on the next project.
Del Anima Kitchen is tiny, Gabriel was getting whatever, and so we decided we needed to open up another restaurant. It was successful, so we looked at Lartuzzi. We found Lartuzzi in the West Village. It was at that time, it was a little bit bigger project. I left my job finally to focus on this. So we opened up Lartuzzi a year after Del Anima in December of 2008, and came on board. And then we did Enfora. We wanted to do it. We had the opportunity for the space next door to Del Anima was coming available. So wanted to do a little bar there, and that was how Enfora came about. We couldn't do a full kitchen. It just was a smaller space. And then, we looked a long time for the right next move, and for which is eventually La Piccio. And we actually signed that lease in 2011, and just because of a number of reasons with the landlord, and it's a bigger landlord, bigger buildings, they just kind of said, well, you have to wait a little bit to get in here. So we would have opened that sooner, to be honest with you. We would have mobilized and opened that sooner, but we knew that we had to wait for a while. And that was just a bigger project that we wanted to have a bigger bar, and Lartuzzi was going well, and we wanted to give Gabe his proper kitchen, because even Lartuzzi's kitchen is really small for the volume that it does and for the size of the restaurant. And so that was La Piccio.
So, you know, as you're growing pretty rapidly, which means, you know, you need to bring on a number of new people onto the team to kind of help manage and oversee that. And I noticed some folks I used to work with over at Gramercy, Kevin, Gary, and Amelia. But can you talk a little bit about that process of like adding people onto the team and who some of the key players are now?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, the people, and this sounds so stupid and corny or whatever, but it's true. I mean, the people and is why we do a lot of this. It's just, it's so rewarding and so fulfilling to kind of, you're building this, it's not use the word family and all that kind of, it's just, there's a great camaraderie. And so, the people that we have on board now and continue to have, it's just, it's mind-boggling how talented these people are, and I'm going to say these young people are because a lot of them are younger than me. Kevin Gary, our director of operations now, was our opening general manager at Lartuzzi. He's also an Albany guy, you know, upstate guy, so that's a good thing. Try to keep it tight. And we've built the management company. When I left IWM and focused on this full time, one of the key things was how are we going to be able to kind of grow at a decent rate? So I was able to convince some guys to give me a little bit of money to hire people that we couldn't normally support necessarily. So for a bigger picture, longer term kind of thing, I've got a couple of key guys who put a lot of faith in us, and so was able to bring on probably more support than what you would normally have from a smaller group. So when we, you know, grow a restaurant a year or something like that, we were building some support and infrastructure prior to that, with the understanding that, you know, we don't want to go too fast and we want to be able to execute these things and build training programs and processes and all that boring stuff that really actually, you know, you need. Really,
yeah, well,
really
it keeps
bad.
The business going. Well, yeah. That was one of the interesting things that you guys measure your success across three bottom lines. So it's people, profit, and planet. So mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about coming to like those three as the benchmarks for success.
Yeah, like I said, the people are we can't do this without. It's a super high execution, kind of risky business. You know, every night there's 1,000 things that can go wrong in any restaurant. You have a lot of people that you depend on a regular basis. I'm not in the restaurants every night and whatnot. So the people are obviously very important. You got to have the camaraderie. You have to hire good people. And not, and when I say good, I don't mean people that have, you know, good servers. I mean, or good cooks, are good people, you know, people of high level of character and that are fun and that get kind of our philosophy, and which is just be warm, be real, you know, and be energetic and fun and creative. And so we hire people like that. Profit, you have to. This is a business. You know, I have a responsibility to the great people that have invested in us to return, you know, their money.
Well, they want it back?
Yeah, yeah, you believe
it.
See,
I always thought restaurants were more of like a donation investment. You're like, throw it this way and maybe I'll get a table when I want to come in and eat on Friday nights.
So. You know, we take that part seriously. We do. I think I'm sometimes referred to, you know, I think people just say, oh, that's the money guy, you know. But no, this is a business and we run it very seriously, that part of it as well. And then, yeah, finally, it's, you know, we don't own this planet. We're here and we need to take care of it. And it's great. The drivers behind this business are, you know, Joe, Gabriel, Catherine, Kevin, and some, you know, other folks. We all believe in the same thing. We don't want to just tear this thing up, and we really need to take care of our planet and where we're living. And so just acting in a responsible manner as far as how our practices, how we run our restaurants, and, you know, Green Restaurant Association, we're 3-star certified at our restaurants and working towards getting that at La Picchio as well. It makes sense. It feels right to us, so we do it that way. So,
and then I would say some of the other kind of charitable focus. One of the things that kind of stuck out to me was the focus on disaster relief, which I feel like I never see that. Why was that kind of something that you guys chose to put, you know, in that primary space?
Every year, I mean, there's something that happens, and you know, I personally haven't been in a place yet, and hopefully never, where it's like, why? You know, why did this happen? And did that, you know, that affected me personally as closely. Of course, you know, Sandy recently has definitely affected some people that are very close, and our businesses were shut down for a week. But, you know, what is that compared to what really happened? But we feel like every year there's something, and there's a call for people to help out. So for us, you know, to make that, etch that out as, okay, there's going to be disasters, and we realize that, and some are going to be closer to us, like Sandy, this, you know, in the Rockaways and whatnot, and some are going to be, you know, farther away with Haiti. It was a big one that, but it doesn't matter. Like, people got, you know, affected, and it wasn't their fault, or there's nobody's, you know, and so how can we help that? So that was just why we kind of established that piece of our philanthropic efforts, which...
Yeah, and then you're a dad, so I'm assuming that was probably some of the genesis for your work with wellness in the schools?
Yes, yeah. The one of the founding partners there, and the executive director now, Nancy Easton, is who is just, man, if you could bottle up her energy, and it really... you would, you know, she's amazing. And her husband, Andy, I met them through IWM, did a tasting with them and we just connected, you know, they're salt of the earth kind of people. You know, as we opened up the first restaurant, they were building this organization. They were like, would you, you know, can you, you know, join and help out? And they just had this just amazing energy and great group of people. And the message is just so right on, you know. Definitely believe that our children's health and both physical and mental, which obviously they're connected, is so important. And it is the root of what, you know, if we want a lot of these issues that we face in this world to be taken care of, it starts with the little ones. They're very sincere kids, man. They're you know, they can be the most amazing grown-ups or they can be the worst. It all depends on how we treat them and whatnot. So yeah, it touches to the heart.
Yeah, they keep it real.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, August, thank you so much for joining us today. If folks want to find out more about you or your restaurant group, they can check out the website, epimgt.com, or tune in Wednesday mornings and hear Joe Campanelli on In the Drink, August's partner, for more. Thanks for coming in. It was great to chat.
Thanks for having me. It was really enjoyable.
This, like all 30 of our live weekly shows, are available for free as a download through iTunes. You can also find us on Stitcher Smart Radio or visit the website, www.heritageradionetwork.org. If you like what you hear, please consider clicking that donate tab and becoming a member today. And as always, stay tuned in and thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.